And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today's July 30th, 211th day of the year. 154 days remain till the year's over with. And that may be a good thing. Well, before I get started, I do want to send a shout out to Rich Forrest, who is still in the hospital in California. On this day in history, in 762, Baghdad is founded. 1419, the first defenestration of Prague. A crowd of radical Hussites kills 7 members of the Prague City Council. You know, it's interesting to see that even elected officials can have their comeuppance. 1502, Christopher Columbus lands at Guanaja in the Bay Islands off the coast of Honduras, and that was on his 4th voyage. In 1609, the Beaver Wars at Ticonderoga, which is now Crown Point, New York. Samuel de Champlain shoots and kills 2 Iroquois chiefs on behalf of his native allies. And that began a 150-year war. 1619, in Jamestown, Virginia, the first colonial European representative assembly in America took place. The Virginia General Assembly. It convened for the very first time on this date. 1627, an earthquake kills about 5,000 people in Gargano, Italy. 1635, the 80 Years' War. Siege of Chincachans begins. Frederick Henry, Prince of Orange, begins to recapture the strategically important fortress from the Spanish army. 1656, the Battle of Warsaw ends with a Swedish Brandenburg victory over a much larger Polish-Lithuanian force. 1676, Nathaniel Bacon issues the Declaration of the People of Virginia. That begins Bacon's rebellion against the rule of Governor William Berkeley. I had an ancestor involved in the Bacon's rebellion. He wound up arresting his father-in-law, who was a prominent supporter of the governor. 1729, founding of Baltimore, Maryland. 1733, the first Masonic Grand Lodge in the future U.S. was constituted in Massachusetts. 1756, in St. Petersburg, Bartolomeo Rastrelli presents the newly built Catherine Palace to Empress Elizabeth and her courtiers. 1811, Father Miguel Hidalgo y Costilla, leader of the Mexican insurgency, is executed by the Spanish in Chihuahua City, Mexico. 1859, first ascent of Grand Combine, one of the highest summits in the Alps, took place. 1863, American Indian Wars. Representatives of the U.S. and tribal leaders, including Chief Pocatello of the Shoshone, signed the Treaty of Box Elder. Didn't do a whole lot of good, but they signed it. 1864, American Civil War, Battle of the Crater. Union forces attempt to break the Confederate lines at Petersburg, Virginia, by exploding a large bomb under their trenches. It caused a lot of death and destruction, but it didn't accomplish what they wanted. 1865, the steamboat Brother Jonathan sinks off the coast of Crescent City, California. 225 passengers die. The deadliest shipwreck on the Pacific coast of the U.S. up to that point in time. 1866, armed Confederate veterans in New Orleans riot against a meeting of radical Republicans. They kill 48 and injure another 100. 1871, the Staten Island Ferry Westfield's boiler explodes. 85 people are killed. 1912, Japan's Emperor Meiji dies and succeeded by his son, Yoshihito, who is now known as the Emperor Taisho. 1930, Montevideo, Uruguay wins the first FIFA World Cup. 1932, premiere Walt Disney's Flowers and Trees, the first cartoon short to use Technicolor, and the first Academy Award-winning cartoon short. It was considered quite advanced for its time. 1945, World War II, Japanese submarine I-58 sinks the USS Indianapolis. 883 seamen die. Most die during the next 4 days till an aircraft notices the survivors in the water. Sharks got a lot of them, I understand. 1956, the Joint Resolution of Congress is signed by President Eisenhower, authorizing that In God We Trust become the U.S. national motto. 1962, Trans-Canadian Highway, the longest national highway in the world, is officially opened. 1965, President Johnson signs the Social Security Act of 1965 into law. That established Medicare and Medicaid. Okay, in 1966, England defeats West Germany to win the 1966 FIFA World Cup at Wembley Stadium after extra time. 1969, Vietnam War. President Nixon makes an unscheduled visit to South Vietnam and meets with President Nguyen Van Thieu and U.S. military commanders. 1971, Apollo program. On Apollo 15, David Scott and James Irwin on the Apollo Lunar Module Falcon land on the moon with the first lunar rover. 1971, All Nippon Airways Boeing 727 and the Japanese Air Force F-86 collide over Morioka, Iwate in Japan, killing 162 people. 1974, Watergate scandal. President Nixon releases subpoenaed White House recordings after being ordered to do so by the Supreme Court of the U.S. 1975, Jimmy Hoffa disappears from the parking lot of the Marcus Red Fox restaurant in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. That was a suburb of Detroit. He disappeared about 2:30 p.m. He just had a lunch meeting with some acquaintances. He's never seen or heard from again. 1978, the 7:30. Okinawa Prefecture changes its traffic to the right-hand side of the road, to the left-hand side of the road. 1980, Vanuatu gains independence. 1980, Israel's Knesset passes the Jerusalem Law. Now, the Jerusalem Law, it's a common name for a basic law, Jerusalem, capital of Israel. Although the law didn't use the term, the Israeli Supreme Court interpreted it as an effective annexation of East Jerusalem. Now, the United Nations Security Council, as might be expected, condemned the attempted change in status to Jerusalem and ruled the law null and void in United Nations Security Council Resolution 478. Didn't do a whole lot of good, but they did. 1981, as many as 50,000 demonstrators, mostly women and children, took to the streets and launched to protest food ration shortages in communist Poland. 1990, Ian Gao, conservative member of parliament, is assassinated at his home by IRA terrorists in a car bombing after he assured the group the British government would never surrender to him. 2003, New Mexico, the last old-style Volkswagen Beetle rolls off the assembly line. 2006, the world's longest-running music show, Top of the Pops, is broadcast for the last time on BBC Two. That show had been on the air for 42 years. 2011, marriage of Queen Elizabeth II's eldest granddaughter, Zara Phillips, to former rugby union footballer Mike Tindall. Zara Phillips was a British equestrian, an Olympian, and daughter of Princess Anne and Captain Mark Phillips. She's the oldest granddaughter of Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip. She was sixth in line of succession to the British throne. Now she's 20th in line. She won the Evening World Championship, the Eventing World Championship in Aachen in 2006. And in 2006, she was also voted BBC Sports Personality of the Year. She was appointed a member of the Order of the British Empire in the 2007 New Year's Honors for her service to equestrianism. And in 2012, she carried an Olympic flame at Cheltenham Racecourse on her horse, Toytown. So, and she
quite an attractive young lady.
Let's see what else we got. 2012, a train fire kills 32 and injures 27 on the Tamil Nadu Express in Andhra Pradesh in India. 2012, a power grid failure in Delhi leaves more than 300 million people without power in northern India. 2014, 20 killed and 150 are trapped after a landslide in Maharashtra in India. And in 2020, NASA's Mars 2020 mission was launched on an Atlas V rocket from Cape Canaveral Space Force Station. We'll see what comes of that. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day. Abdon and Sanon. Aitbren. Maxima, Donatella, and Secunda. Peter Chrysologus. In the Lutheran Church, Robert Barnes. Rufinus of Assisi. Tatwine. Ursus of Auxerre. Solanus Casey. Feast of the Throne in Morocco. Independence Day. And Vanuatu celebrates her independence from the UK and France in 1980. Internationally, it's International Day of Friendship. And in Paraguay, it's Dia del Amigo. In South Sudan, it's Martyrs Day. Let's see what else we might have. In 1178, Frederick I, Barbarossa, Holy Roman Emperor, is crowned King of Burgundy. 1419, the first defenestration of Prague. Anti-Catholic Hussites, followers of executed reformer Jan Hus, storm Prague Town Hall and throw the judge, mayor, and several city council members out the window. They either die in the fall or are killed by the crowd outside. 1619, House of Burgess, Virginia forms. 1869, Charles, the world's first oil tanker, departs from the U.S. headed for Europe with a bulk capacity of 7,000 barrels of oil. 1935, the first Penguin book is published, starting the paperback revolution. 1937, the Russian Politburo issues NKVD order number 00447. It's intended to repress former Kulak and anti-Soviets. 269,100 folks are arrested. 76,000 are shot. Part of the Great Purge. Now, let's see. In 1898, Otto von Bismarck, who was Prime Minister of Prussia from 1862 to 1873 and 1873 to 1890. He used ruthlessness and modernization of the unified Germany. Founded a German empire in 1871. He was the first chancellor up until 1890. But as I say, on this day in 1898, he died. Made a lot of folks happy. 2007... Swedish screenwriter and director Ingmar Bergman, known for his bleak depiction of human loneliness, vulnerability, and torment, died. And we talked about Jimmy Hoffa, who vanished in 1975. I talked about the USS Indianapolis that sank in on this date, 1945. It was sunk by a Japanese submarine. It had been delivering the internal components of the atomic bombs that were later dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Not quite 900 men died, many of whom died from shark attack, dehydration, and salt poisoning as they treaded water waiting for rescue. On this day in 1942, Frank Sinatra last sang with Tommy Dorsey's orchestra. After that, he went into a solo career. And in 1921, insulin was first isolated as a
pancreatic extract by the Canadian scientists Sir Frederick G. Banting and Charles Best. And on this day in 1863, Henry Ford, the American industrialist and automobile manufacturer who revolutionized factory production by coming up with the assembly line idea, was born. And in 1540, Lutheran clergyman Robert Barnes was burned as a heretic after being used by Thomas Cromwell and King Henry VIII to gain European support for their anti-papal movement in England. And let's see what else there might be, if anything. On 101 BC, the Battle of Vercelli. The Roman army under Gaius Marius defeats the Cimbri in just Alpine Gaul, ending the Celto-German threat on Italy's border with over 100,000 of the Cimbri killed. 1579, Benedict I ends his reign as Catholic Pope. And 657, St. Vitalian, you know, popes become saints after they die, begins his reign as Catholic Pope. He succeeded Eugene I. 762, the city of Baghdad is founded by Abbasid Caliph al-Mansur. He did it just north of ancient Baghdad. In 1537, resisting of Bumi, the French and the Dutch have a ceasefire in their war. 1601, Spanish garrison of Rhine Birch surrenders to the Earl of Mauritius. In 1646, the English Parliament sets King Charles I's Newcastle propositions. 1653, Johan de Witt sworn in as pension advisor of Holland. That was a pretty much a do-nothing position. 1678, English troops land in Flanders. 1715, the Spanish gold and silver fleet disappears off St. Lucie in Florida. Hurricane took it down. 1739, Caspar Wistar begins glass manufacturing in Alloway Town in New Jersey. 1775, Captain James Cook returns to England. 1792, 500 Marseillians men sing France's national anthem for the first time. 1809, a British armed force of 39,000 lands in Walcheren. In 1822, James Varick becomes the first bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church. 1825, Malden Island is discovered in the Central Pacific by the British warship HMS Blundy. 1826, Java Prince Dipo Nigoro surprise attacks the Dutch colony. 82 people are killed. 1836, the first English language newspaper is published in Hawaii. 1863, President Abraham Lincoln issues his Eye for an Eye order. He ordered a rebel prisoner to be shot for every black prisoner shot. 1864, the Battle of Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. The town was burned by Union forces under McCausland. 1864, the Battle of Petersburg. General Burnside fails in an attack on Petersburg in the Battle of the Crater. 1865, Pope Pius IX visits Suriname. 1866, New Orleans Democratic government orders police to raid an integrated Republican Party meeting. 40 people are killed and 150 are injured. 1870, the Republic of Klipdrift is proclaimed by Transvaal President Andreas Pretorius after the discovery of diamonds in South Africa in 1866. It resulted in a flood of treasure hunters. Ownership of the diamond fields was contested by the Boer Republics. 1872, Malone Loomis patents wireless telegraphy. 1878, German anti-Semitism begins during the Reichstag election. 1902, anti-Jewish rioters attacked the funeral procession of Rabbi Joseph in New York City. 1907, Russia and Japan signed an agreement guaranteeing freedom of China while recognizing each other's special interest in trade. 1907, the Filipinos elect their first legislature. It will have its first meeting October 16th. 1907, on this date, the French bombard Casablanca and land troops to occupy the Atlantic coast region of Morocco after attacks on foreigners. 1913, on this date, conclusion of the Second Balkan War. 1914, after initial reluctance, Tsar Nicholas II of Russia is persuaded to decree a general mobilization in response to Austria. He said, think of the thousands and thousands of men to be sent to their deaths. Well, eventually, he was, even he went down. And finally, in 1916, German saboteurs blow up a munitions plant on Blacktown Island in New Jersey. Well, we've come to the end of our history segment. Now, what we've been doing yesterday, we were talking about mysteries of the moon. And, of course, the, one of the questions that I heard debated by quite a number of people, is the moon really hollow? Now, there are a number of oddities about the moon, no question about it. Now we have the question of the origins of the moon, but in addition to that, there are a number of other strange things about this little planetoid. For one thing, the latest dating of the moon rocks would seem to indicate the moon is younger than we thought. We talked about that yesterday. Now, the Maria, which are the great dark spots, which have been put down as being lava from extinct volcanoes, but there were no volcanoes on the moon, current or extinct. So where did it come from? And then, of course, the biggest oddity of all is the orbit of the moon around the Earth. It is almost perfectly circular, and it's just the right size at certain times to block out the sun. But almost all orbits of planets are elliptical, being sort of a squashed circle in shape. And even planets found orbiting other star systems, and there's a couple of thousand of those we've identified, all have elliptical orbits. And, of course, we discussed yesterday that the moon's center of gravity doesn't align with its geometric center. Then we have something that is strange even by moon standards. Moonquakes. During the Apollo mission of 1969 to 1972, when seismic recorders that were installed and left behind on the moon reported moonquakes. Now, nobody at the time thought this meant much, but contrary to this idea, there were results, and lots of them. There have been literally hundreds of moonquakes, some reaching as high as 5.5 on the Richter scale. Now, considering that the moon doesn't have any tectonic plates, no continental drift, and what we believe to be a frozen core, how can there be moonquakes? They have to be caused by something other than what causes earthquakes on Earth. Now, just what that something is, scientists have no idea. Now, the current and most prevalent theory for the cause of moonquakes is tidal forces exerted on the moon by the pull of the Earth. But there's some major problems with this theory. The biggest problem being that although the tidal quakes are always the same on a month-to-month basis, the quakes only seem to occur in other regions, not those predicted to be affected by the tidal pull. And, of course, scientists can't account for this. And the reason for deep moonquakes is also a mystery. In fact, the whole moonquake problem is a major mystery, an enigma scientists are attempting to solve. In other words, as to what causes these quakes, they have no idea. In fact, as one scientist put it, the whole question of the interior of the moon is pretty sketchy. Now, that's not exactly a scientific explanation, but it would appear to be an honest one. For one thing, that's known is that there is a nest of 30 deep moonquakes on the far side of the moon. But according to scientists, these deep quakes don't seem to go as far down as the core. Or perhaps somehow they're being deflected around the core. As one research paper put it, the deep interior of the moon severely attenuates or deflects seismic waves. So how a solid rock or an iron core could accomplish this is utterly baffling to scientists. But if there's no core at all, if the center of the moon is hollow, then there'd be nothing there to transmit these shock waves, and they'd have to go around the hollow space instead. So if there is a core, then we got a bigger mystery. So the question becomes, is the center of the moon hollow? Based on the moonquake, scientists just don't know, but a hollow interior would account for the quake's deflection around the center of the moon. Another oddity is very amusing because it resulted in the first astronauts to land on the moon having a heck of a time getting lunar rock samples because the crust was so hard. When they were trying to drill, the astronauts are literally in danger of shooting themselves off the surface in the light gravity. So strenuous were their efforts to obtain samples. They wanted to drill into the resistant rock of one of the mare on the moon. So you have to ask yourself why the surface rock is so much harder than scientists expected. Or, taking into consideration the designing methods of retrieving rock samples, it's just one more bizarre oddity. Now, the far side of the moon has a thicker crust than the nearer side. And this is bizarre, for the Earth doesn't have this sort of anomaly, nor does any other moon and planet we know of in the solar system. The planetary impact theory of Theia, which is the mysterious planet that's supposed to hit the Earth to form the moon, goes to elaborate extra lengths to account for this by adding another moon or moonlet in orbit around the Earth, which is supposed to have collided with the main one. So again, we have a very unwieldy theory that's made even more so. As it also turns out, the samples of lunar rocks are made up largely of ilmenite, a dark metal oxide mineral, and one rich in titanium. Now, titanium is a very popular metal because of its lightness, strength, and durability, and hardness. But it's also very expensive because of its relative rarity. Now, apparently the moon has plenty of it, although on Earth it isn't nearly so plentiful. And lunar samples contain neptunium-237 as well as uranium-236. Now, these are elements not found on Earth to any real extent. Neptunium-237 is found only in trace quantities on Earth as a result of radioactive decay of uranium. But it's very unstable, and because it decays, that's why there's so little of it on Earth. Now, uranium-236, although it's more stable than uranium-238, which is radioactive, is rare on Earth for the same reason. It also decays. So why is there so much more of it on the moon? I mean, that's a mystery we've not been able to solve, because the only way we can obtain it in any quantity is through artificial man-made means here on the Earth. In other words, if we want it on Earth, we have to make it. So is it natural on the moon for some reason, but not here? Or did somebody there make it? Then there's an odd sort of visual in a photograph taken through the auspices of NASA. And it's a strange type of picture. The photograph is of the South Lunar Pole and appears to show a definite swirling pattern, or if you will, that centers on the South Pole. From there, the craters seem to swirl outward in a counterclockwise direction, kind of a spiral pattern. The question is if this is just an optical illusion, or could it be real? To us, it certainly seems real enough, but you can judge for yourself if you look at the photo. The photo, by way, is a compilation of smaller regional photos assembled into a larger one without any retouching, which NASA is famous for. Then we have a very bizarre fog bank on the moon. Monitoring instruments left behind on the moon to collect data registered a cloud of water vapor on a planet that's not supposed to have any water at all. This occurred March 7, 1971. This cloud of vapor drifted over the lunar surface and made detectable for 14 hours. The cloud encompassed about 100 square miles. Now, on the moon, there's supposed to be virtually no atmosphere at all, being a near vacuum, so finding water vapor in such an amount is very odd, and having a cloud of it is literally impossible. Then we have NASA Technical Report R-277, which is a chronological catalog of reported lunar events. It goes back to 1500 BC, and it comes up to the mid-1960s. It covers 500 years of lunar oddities. Now, this period was chosen because it starts with when telescopes first began to be used. And as over time, of course, use became much more prevalent. Reports of strange events on the moon date back far earlier than just this period. And some of the observers include many truly famous names in science and astronomy. So what did they see on the moon? But if you name it, it seems that somebody saw it. Everything from lightning and glows and streaks and mist and vapors and beacons and pulses of light and moving lights and volcanoes and beams and clouds and tracks and almost everything you can imagine has been seen on the moon. And they've been seen not only repeatedly, but sometimes for long durations, extending for months. So witnessed by far more than just one lone astronomer of the times. So common are these sightings, even now NASA's coined the term transient lunar phenomena to describe them. But what are they? Naming something doesn't tell us what it is. I mean, for one example, take the volcano sightings on the moon. Well, scientists have determined if there were ever volcanoes on the moon, they ceased well over a billion years ago. So what are the current volcanoes seen on the moon in these current reports? Well, they're a total mystery. But many astronomers, according to the report, saw them, or at least called something they saw by the name volcano. And NASA's own Operation Moonblink shocked officials when it actually managed to spot no less than 28 strange events on the moon in a very brief span of time. Now, Dr. Robert Jastrow made the reference to the Rosetta Stone of the planets, and he was the first chairman on the Lunar Exploration Committee. And this was a statement of how he viewed the moon, of how the mysteries of that world would seem to multiply the more it was studied, including the mystery of its origin. Now, like the original Rosetta Stone, which was used to determine how to translate Egyptian hieroglyphics, it was Dr. Jastrow's contention if we could figure out these mysteries of the moon, it might reveal much about the other celestial bodies inhabiting our solar system. So as an adjunct to this, after six physical landings on the moon had been accomplished by various Apollo astronauts, Earl Ubel, the science writer, stated the lunar Rosetta Stone remains a mystery. The moon is more complicated than anybody expected. It's not simply a kind of billiard ball frozen in space and time, as many scientists believed. Few of the fundamental questions have been answered. But the Apollo rocks and recordings have spawned a score of mysteries, a few of which are truly breath-stopping. Well, breath-stopping, or blessed, as another one called it, coincidences and mysterious, Scientists are starting to sound a little bit too religious in their descriptions of the moons at this point. After all, the same labels can be applied to any major religion and often used by some, such as Catholicism. But for scientists to use such terms when describing attributes of our moon is an oddity in and of itself. Now, the vast seas of frozen lava called Maria are a bit of a mystery as well. Now, there are far fewer craters in these regions, and since craters accumulate with time, it's supposed the lava flows that created the Maria had to have occurred after many of the craters are already formed on the moon. And the lava, of course, flowed over them, flooded them, and buried them. Only more recent meteorite impacts have created the craters we see in the Maria today. But this means the Maria are more recent in origin than many of those initial crater impacts. And yet, scientists had thought they were formed early on in the moon's history. So what caused the moon to belch millions of tons of lava onto its surface long after that time, after the surface had cooled and then accumulated numerous craters from subsequent meteor impacts? Where did the magma come from if there are no active volcanoes on the moon? Did the energy of the impact create it, or did it all come from a liquid core, one that the moon is not supposed to have? Again, for so many mysteries, as many oddities unaccounted for, even after all this time, all the study we've done for our nearest neighbor, we don't have an answer to these questions. Then we have the Aristarchus crater, also known as the Blue Gem. Now, this particular crater has a long history of oddities. Strange lights, blue flashes, blue mist, blue glows, you name it, it's there. Aristarchus seems to have had them over the centuries. In 1963, observations done at the Lowell Observatory reported reddish glows along the tops of the ridges of the crater. And then a few days later, multicolored lights were seen on the moon and by more than one observatory. So it's corroborating each other that such events actually did take place. Moreover, these observations didn't occur during a sunset or sunrise on the moon, so it wasn't a trick of the light. However, so often are blue flashes, lights, blue beacons, and blue pulses seen there by observers that the Aristarchus crater was given the nickname the Blue Gem. Now, there are three different layers of material on the moon. Now, there may be more, but we know there are three. And the densest of these layers, meaning the heaviest types of rocks, is found on the surface of the moon. This is impossible because, as we all know, denser material being heavy sink. Lighter material floats. Therefore, densest material should be at the center of the moon, not on the surface. That's the way it is on Earth. It should be on the moon as well. But this is not the case. Why? Scientists don't seem to know. They theorize. They pontificate. But as yet, they haven't come up with any really substantial, adequate theory to explain this oddity. Furthermore, the mineral content of the moon differs markedly from the Earth in that Earth has far more iron than the moon does. And we mentioned how dry the moon material is compared to that of the Earth. But fragments of oxidized iron have been found in lunar samples. Oxidized iron, for those who don't know, is iron that's rusted. And for rust, you have to have water. So where did the water, or hydrogen and oxygen, come from to accomplish this on a world that's supposed to be airless? And rust or oxidation takes time, which means there had to be a supply of these gases for a considerable period to cause rusting. Well, as it turns out, there is some water on the moon after all. And that may account for how iron could rust or oxidize. But it isn't in great quantities or hardly in all areas. Actual water in any detectable amount seems to lie buried in the moon's surface, but only in those areas of permanent shadow of some of the craters, such as those at the lunar south pole, where light never hits to heat it up and evaporate the frozen water. But how the water got there is a mystery. Moreover, how rocks in general can have a higher percentage of water than expected is yet another oddity. Asteroid or comet impacts might leave some water behind in the permanent shadows of crater walls, but this doesn't explain or account for the higher than normally expected water content of moon rock in general. It's just another mystery. I mean, as we've noted yesterday and today, there are mysteries that are about the moon that abound. Our closest planetary neighbor, whom we humans have actually visited in person on several occasions, is full of enigmas. Suffice it to say, some bizarre things appear to be going on the moon, and so far we just scratched the surface in mentioning some of these things. And the strangeness isn't just about what's going on with our satellite now, but also how it even came to be there. Of all the planetary bodies in our solar system, this has been the most closely observed one by most people and for the longest period of time. But there are still mysteries. If anything, the sheer number of these enigmas just seems to keep growing. Oddities seem to be the norm when it comes to the moon, not the exception. So I guess the question is, are we saying the moon's a strange place? Well, actually it is. But it's also apparently something else. Based on all the oddities and all the weird mysteries concerning the moon, it just shouldn't be. Too much is too peculiar to all... to be easily accounted for when examining the moon. Things are out of place. Things are off from the expected, what our theories tell us we should find. Everything our theories hold is valid about the moon are being challenged. From the moon's orbit, the make of its material, its isotope ratios, its water content, and the fact that for a dead air of this world, it behaves very much and more often at odds with this. And we can't seem to come up with a convincing theory of even how the moon got there. So here we are, just a little world, and we have an oversized moon, and the origins of which we can't explain. Well, we've talked about the basic facts of the moon, and we have had a look at all the oddities, strange things involving our neighboring world. There follows the next question we must wonder about as a matter of course. Could the moon actually be hollow? Now, you might think this is an incredible question, but there's some real basis for the question, and the fact that it might be true, if only because of the oddities and some of the other evidence. Now, there's a question about the evidence, but there are some major questions about every theory of the moon's origin. But that doesn't stop countless scientists and seemingly endless television shows from propounding these as if they were fact. Now, the hollow moon theory seems to answer more questions than it raises, unlike the other origin theories. For instance, we're betting anyone with an interest in this subject has seen at least one television show that shows a Mars-sized planet colliding with the Earth to produce the moon. Now, this theory's been cited more as a fact or a given than just what it really is. It's kind of like Darwin's theory of evolution. It's never been proven. It's just a theory. But if you ask any scientist, he's going to tell you it's a fact, because that's what he was trained to say. Now, the spaceship moon theory is probably the first, or at least one of the first real theories where the idea is discussed that the moon may not be what it seems to be, that it may in fact be hollow. Now, this theory is often referred to as the Vassin-Sherbakov theory, and it postulates the moon may not actually be a satellite of the Earth, or at least not a natural satellite. Michael Vassin and Alexander Sherbakov, with the time of the This theory was created with members in good standing of the Soviet Academy of Sciences proposed this idea in an article they wrote in July 1970 entitled, "Is the Moon the Creation of Intelligence?" They developed the theory the moon was an unnatural thing. They said it could well be a worldlet that had been hollowed out by aliens, obviously ones having a far superior technology to ours. And they went on to say the aliens may well have used such technologies to make the center of the moon molten and then remove this liquid magma by ejecting it out onto the surface of the moon, where it hardened into the maria. So the result? The moon would be a hollow shell with a rocky, natural-looking exterior, except for those large areas of solidified magma that we see as maria today. They further propose the inner shell be made of metal, for added structural support, don't you know? At some point after this was done, The moon was then moved into such a nearby perfect circular orbit around the Earth for some unknown reason. Besides citing the Mare as the exudate, a liquefied interior of the moon, they also pointed to the craters on the moon, particularly the larger ones, as another indication of their spaceship moon theory. You see, despite some of the moon's craters being truly massive in area, they are all very shallow. At least the larger ones are. If formed from meteors and asteroids colliding with the moon, these scientists argued this would not be the case, that the craters should be much, much deeper than they are. Instead, they're shallow and relatively flat in their centers. In some cases, the bottoms of the craters are even convex in shape, bulging slightly. And they use this as further evidence the craters could not have been formed as thought by meteor impacts in the way believed by most astronomers. So was this idea credible? Well, it does seem on the moon the smaller craters do have depths proportionate to their area and size. Their interiors are proportionally deep to their diameters, in other words. But this doesn't seem to be true of the larger craters on the moon. So you have to ask yourself why this would be. So how does one account for this disturbing discrepancy? Well, the authors, the two scientists, say that this is because the smaller craters are actually created by meteor impacts, which burrow their way into the surface of the moon. But these two Russian scientists claim this layer is only about 5 miles deep. The larger impact craters, which should have impacted more deeply, were stopped by the inner hull, the metal hull supposedly manufactured by the aliens. This, the two scientists say, would account for the shallowness of the larger craters. And despite the size of the striking object, its speed and force, the inner hull of the moon deflected it back out, causing the result we see only with the larger craters in the form of flat, shallow centers. So although they're the results of impacts, they weren't allowed to penetrate as deeply as they should have, and thus the shallow interiors of the larger craters. Well, this is a valid point. If what they argue is true, it would indeed account for the shallowness of the larger craters versus the more proportional depths of the smaller ones. The bigger meteors simply couldn't get past the inner hull. Smaller impacts never drove that deeply into the moon's surface to reach the inner hull, so their depth is normal. Also part of their theory is the thickness of this inner steel hull that they believe exists. They say that below the rocky outer layer of the moon, the metal hull might then be as much as 20 miles thick. Inside of this would be an open space, which could be used for any purpose. It might well contain an atmosphere. There may be entities living there. Furthermore, both men also use the evidence of the composition of the material on the surface of the moon. They point out that titanium, zirconium, and chromium make up a larger part of that material than it would on Earth, which makes it considerably different in detail from the materials on the crust of our planet. So, as much alike as the isotopic ratio makeup of the moon's material to the Earth's mantle is, there are significant differences. The scientists went even further. They said some rocks found on the moon date further back than any found on Earth. So what does this mean? Well, it would mean the moon would then be older than the Earth, formed before it did. Or the moon was created before the Earth was by someone or something. And when Apollo 17 brought back some dust samples, which are comprised of orange glass spirals, or tiny spears, along with fragments of other minerals, the particles are quite small and range in size from 20 microns to 45 microns. And what's more, and quite differently than Apollo 11 material brought back, the iron samples were highly and unaccountably wealthy in zinc content. So how did mainstream scientists explain this? Well, they say the material probably originated from these mythical volcanoes that we can't find any proof ever existed. And although, and despite a number of actual moon landings by NASA, no volcanoes, active or extinct, have ever been found. Now, whether any ever existed on the moon is a matter of conjecture. So if it wasn't volcanoes, where did all this dust come from? Well, by these pieces of evidence, Alexander and Michael, the two Russian scientists, argued the moon might have been created before the Earth, citing the older age in some moon rocks than any found on Earth, and so had a different origin. I read a book back in the 1970s called Our Mysterious Moon. It was written by a man named Don Wilson, and it listed a series of facts he believed acted as supporting evidence for the idea of a hollow moon. And then George Leonard wrote a book called Somebody Else's or Someone Else's on the Moon, which came out in 76. And it included a series of NASA photos showing large and artificial-looking structures on the surface of the moon. And he believed these structures might be huge pieces of machinery. So how do mainstream scientists discount this theory? Well, of course, they say it's absolutely impossible. For one thing, they claim the disparity in the age of some rocks from the moon versus the age of the rocks on Earth is due to tectonic activity on our planet. They say rocks here are recycled, and this accounts for the disparity. Being recycled, don't you know, they're simply younger. Well, this is an interesting idea, but is it correct? Well, we don't know. It's just as much a theory at the moment as the hollow moon theory is. But to date, none seem to be able to account for this orange dust samples and their origin or why they should be so heavy in zinc. And none seem to be able to account for the difference in the amount of chromium, titanium, and zirconium between lunar surface samples of rocks and those of rocks on Earth. So although the spaceship moon theory is controversial to say the least, the fact two mainstream scientists proposed it and backed their arguments with some credible evidence has to be taken into consideration. And added to this are those who championed the idea. So, it's a very valid question to ask, is the moon really hollow? So having dealt with a multitude of other oddities, all of which figure into the theories about the moon, we now have to ask the question, could the moon in actual fact be hollow? Is it even possible? So what conditions have to be met in order to be an empty shell? Well, then again, what would be the major problems with such a theory? Well, how would we go about answering this question? Well, the best way, of course, is by finding more evidence that supports the theory the spaceship moon may be true, or at least in some form of variation of it. As we mentioned before, evidence shouldn't hinge on just one source alone, but on as many as possible. To use a metaphor, if enough one-way arrow signs are posted on a street, then you're safe in assuming the street is probably one way. And the same should hold true for theories. Find enough evidence from a variety of sources to support a theory, and that theory just might be true. And if we do it to the level of our one-way sign example, then ask yourself, would you drive down the street the wrong way and ignore all the warning signs? Well, unless you were drunker than Cootie Brown, probably not. So that's how true you might think the idea of those posted signs might be. And although maybe not absolutely certain, you feel the likelihood of it being true so great you don't want to challenge it by driving the wrong way. So, for you, the theory is valid enough it alters your behavior and your plans as to which way you're going to drive. Well, we want to know if this would apply to the hollow moon theory. Are there enough signposts to make you think the idea is, or at least could well be, possible? And again, the best way to do it is to try to find evidence from different sources. That means we shouldn't just rely on the originators of the hollow moon theory, Vassin and Shcherbakov. The evidence they cite for it, because in our estimation, that simply isn't quite enough. We need a little bit more. So we should try to find other corroborating sources of evidence. The more legs we provide as sources of evidence, the more we build our case, the more valid the theory then becomes and can stand on its own. We've already started on doing this by pointing out all the oddities about the moon's origin and its physical as well as its orbital characteristics. First, as we discussed earlier, some of the conditions for a hollow moon have already been met by the evidence provided by the spaceship moon theory. One, we have the massive but shallow craters as opposed to smaller ones that are as deep as they should be, proportional to the area circumference, and the larger ones are not. And this will be indicative of a harder substrata to block the further penetration of the bigger, faster meteors. This being the proposed 20-mile-thick inner shell that the two Russian scientists talk about. Then we have the Mare as possible exudate, the molten rock the aliens might have melted and forced or pumped up onto the lunar surface to create a hollow interior. Anyone looking at the moon at night can clearly see these vast dark patches of relatively flat and frozen lava flows. So since we can't find active or extinct volcanoes, how can you account for them? If there are no volcanoes, there shouldn't, by definition, be any magma under normal circumstances. No plate tectonics, no geothermal activity, no magma. Simple as that. So where did the Mares come from? Well, scientists don't have any idea. And the moon's age is still in question. If it does predate the Earth, that would tell us the moon didn't form along with the Earth, and so it's from somewhere else. The age of certain rocks from the moon do clearly state for date further back in time than any found on the planet of the our planet. Along with these pieces of evidence, we have all the other oddities we talked about earlier. As mentioned earlier, mineral makeup of the materials on the surface of the moon have oddly high quantities of titanium and zinc, which similar surface materials on Earth don't. Titanium definitely being one of the rarer elements here. This would indicate, although the oxygen isotope ratios match surface materials on the moon to surface materials of the Earth, that something else is going on. Something big as well to account for these differences. No current theories of the moon yet account for this problem at all. It's a major discrepancy. However, if the moon were an artificial product and undergone major alterations, this could account for the oddities. Then we have the orange dust that seems to come from somewhere else, purportedly volcanoes on the moon that we can't find. However, and despite numerous photographs of the lunar surface, besides actual manned lunar landings and human explorations, as well as robotic ones, absolutely no volcanoes have been found, either active or dormant. So where did the volcanic dust come from? Again, will the current theories of the moon account for this? But if someone were blowing out vast amounts of the interior in a way similar to volcanoes, this would definitely account for the orange spheres. Then we have the origin theories of the moon. You know, I have some major problems with them. Big drawbacks that, as of the time of this show, have not been accounted for in any realistic way. That's why various reputable scientists as recently as 2011 are still propagating new theories. Each of the main theories, including the planetary impact theory, still leaves big questions. But if the moon were hollow, artificially created, and were altered, this would answer all the questions and oddities. And remember the far side of the moon? The crust is thicker there than in the nearer side. The impact theory really stretches to account for this. If you use the principle of Occam's razor, so unwieldy is this theory at this point that some scientists, and with good reason, are proposing others, such as the georeactor theory. But if the interior was being pumped out as molten magma, this wasn't evenly distributed, and this would account for the differences in thickness between the two sides of our moon. And the orbit of the moon is almost perfectly circular, and this is so unlikely as to make one think the orbit is an artificial one, with someone having deliberately entered the moon into such a type of orbit. Again, orbits are just not normally circular. They're elliptical. So something had to make a planet or moon take up a circular orbit. For the moon to have such one is an incredible oddity in itself. It would have required real precision to achieve. So is this really just by chance? Is it just a coincidence? The number of coincidences at this point regarding the moon do act to stretch one's credibility. And by all accounts, the moon should have a wobble to it, but it doesn't. Somehow, something is compensated for a wobble that should definitely be there. The gravitational center is off because of the Earth's gravitational influence. Something has to be correcting or have corrected for this offset at some point in the past. After all, even the Earth has a wobble, which can start and stop, but it's usually there. So to date, no wobble of the moon has ever been seen. If the moon is hollow, that would account for this state of affairs. Something in the interior could be offset, thus correcting for any such possible wobble. Well, at this point in time, we've run out of time for today's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, on Monday, when once again you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Till then, have a truly great weekend.